Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help us explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page, and leave your comments and suggestions to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. And on the homepage of the website, if you wish, you can actually leave a voicemail message for us, and we urge you to do so if you so desire. And it gives us great pleasure to welcome to the microphone for today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, Dr. Andrea Weiss, the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Provost and Associate Professor of Bible at the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, the New York City campus. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to Seekers of Meaning. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure to speak with you. And I know of your work and your actual brilliance and contributions to HUC and our community. So let me start out by saying thank you for all of that, because well-deserved. We're here to explore a absolutely fascinating project that you spearheaded with a woman by the name of Lisa Weinberger. A book called American Values, Religious Voices, subtitled 100 Days, 100 Letters. This is a very, very, very unique book. And talk to me about what this is. What is American Values, Religious Voices, 100 Days, 100 Letters?
So this, what is now a book, started out as a social media project, and this was originated as an idea I had in the days following the 2016 presidential election, when I had the thought that what if we could get 100 scholars of religion from all different faiths and send a letter to the president, vice president, and our leaders in Washington that would articulate our core American values that are connected to our different religious traditions. And it was kind of a far-fetched idea that I managed to get off the ground with the help of Lisa Weinberger, who's a graphic designer and has her own design and branding studio in Philadelphia. And we managed to make it happen. So we sent a letter a day for the first 100 days of the Trump administration. And then just this fall, the letters were published as a book by the University of Cincinnati Press.
Why letters?
Well, I thought sort of on a practical level that a 350-word letter would be short enough that our scholars would be willing to say yes to the invitation to write it, and also short enough for our audience to read it.
So you had this idea. You went to the UC Press. I think when we spoke before, you said this was an adventure for them as well, right?
Yeah, this was one of their debut books. HUC has a campus in Cincinnati, and when I was visiting the campus last February, I met them. They were just getting up and running, and after an initial meeting, I pitched the idea of the book to them, and so we were able to publish the book, which contains the 100 letters plus four supplemental essays and indices and other ways to help so that people can read the letters, but also put them in conversation with each other.
Is this designed as a teaching technique, as a teaching tool, this book? How do you, as you and Lisa put this together with the press, how did you envision this being used?
Well, it was an interesting process to create the book, because the original letter campaign unfolded week by week. So where there were 14 weeks in the 100 days from January 20th to April 29th of 2017. And then as we reformatted the letters as a book, we put them in groups of 10 as chapters. And but it was important for us to have ways, a number of different ways that people could put the letters in conversation with each other. And so one way, for example, we went through and did a study of what were the 20 values that rose to the surface. What are the values that are most prominent in the letters? And so the book begins with a beautiful two-page spread, color spread, that lists those most prominent values, and then the letters, identifying the letters that discuss those themes. So that's at the start of the book, and there's also both a scriptural index and a very detailed subject index in the back. So for example, if you wanted to see what do the letters have to say about empathy, about compassion, about justice, then that's a way for readers to be able to see what different authors have to say about those same themes.
And this is an interfaith, correct? And that was part of the plan, correct?
Yeah, we have our 100 authors come from a variety of different faiths. They're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Sikh, and Buddhist, and from a variety of different, diverse racially, diverse geographically. So it was important for us that our 100 authors really capture the tremendous diversity that of our nation.
I gotta ask, how did you decide who made the cut to who is going to be asked? I imagine that must have been some very interesting conversations.
Well, you have to remember that I had this idea literally in the days after the election, and we really got up by the time. So it was really within about 2 weeks after the election. Well, after Thanksgiving, Lisa and I decided I had secured the financial backing from Rabbi Aaron Pankin of blessed memory, who was the president of the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion. So I secured his financial backing, and I put together an advisory committee, and we only had about 50 days to get 100 letter writers. So we just started to reach out to people, and I pitched the idea to as many people as I could. And we just started making lists of people who we thought might be interested. In the end, we had about 50 days. I invited 180 people, and that's what it took to get to 100 people to say yes.
You mentioned Aaron, and could you just, because some people will know you and HUC, and for the people who don't and not familiar, talk to me a little bit about the impact of Dr. Pankin, Aaron Pankin, on this project?
Well, when I, so the Sunday after the election, we had a big program at the Hebrew Union College in New York. And I went up to Aaron and I said, Aaron, I had this idea. I told him I didn't think it would cost very much money. Meanwhile, I really didn't have any idea how much money it would cost, you know, but I figured I'd need some money, maybe a student intern, and would he be willing to help? And he said, let me think about it. And he came back the next day and he said, yes. And the reason why he endorsed the project and why he was one of its biggest proponents once we got started was that this was an example of thought of his notion of thought leadership, which really was a hallmark of his presidency. So the idea that as scholars of religion who are immersed in ancient texts and in these the ideas and the texts of our different faith traditions, that we have something to say about current issues. And it really, I think, was meaningful for him that the project really illustrated what he felt so passionately about, which is the scholars speaking out about issues of the day using the insights of their religious traditions.
So in reading through the book, and let's get this out of the way too, somebody wants to use this book, bring it to their synagogue. It'd be a great adult education. Actually, I think I mentioned this to a friend of mine. This would be a really interesting textbook for confirmation class because it allows them to study text from a variety of different perspectives and religious perspectives, but really related to something that they're living, that these people are living every single day. So I don't know whether people have used that as a confirmation class textbook. I'm sure that somebody's using it for an adult education textbook.
As the project unfolded during the 100 days was that we heard a lot of people as to how they were using the letters. So we know that people in some congregations, they were reading the letters and worship services. We know that people were using the letters at interfaith gatherings. And what was really great is that I also heard from people in religious schools who were using the letters to in their religious school curriculum. So I heard both from a Reform synagogue in Manhattan where the kids were using the letters as part of a sixth grade social action curriculum. And I also heard from the teacher of a school in a Presbyterian church in Auburn, Alabama, where they were also using the letters in their religious school as well.
Have you heard from anybody outside the religious community using this, you know, not in a church or a synagogue or a mosque?
Not specifically.
No, could you just mention, a thought occurred to me. So let me ask you then, with this book, and again, it's available on Amazon. Again, where does somebody get this book?
Yeah, people can get it on Amazon. That is the best place to get it.
Okay. Is this then, Andrea, is it a political book? Is it a religious book? Or is it a civics book? Or is it really all of the above?
Well, I'd say it's all of the above. It's using the teachings, the insights of our various religious traditions to speak about the issues of the day that that are political issues. So, for example, one of the themes that the values that comes up most often in the letters is how do we treat the stranger? How do we treat the vulnerable? And that's an example. That's a prominent theme in our different religious texts, both in the Hebrew Bible, the New Testament, the Quran. We have letters from authors from all of those traditions who talk about those themes in their own religious texts. But it also very much speaks to the issues that are political issues today in terms of immigration and refugees and how do we treat the stranger and the vulnerable today. So that's an example of the way that this project is an intersection of religion and politics.
You mentioned the themes, and in rereading through some of this in preparation for this, and I read it the first time, to be honest, for people who are listening, I attended something that Dr. Weiss did on the book at a congregation in Florida in February, I think it was in February.
Yep.
But some of the themes of empathy and openness and welcoming and justice, they're just almost on every single page. And you read it in light of reading the newspaper or if you can stand to watch the news, it really is. This is a very much of a book that's living. It's not a fossilized thing of what it's very living with these and the texts that are quoted from the various religious traditions, many of whom repeat themselves, which again is fascinating. As you read through these and edited these things, what was your feeling as you kept coming up with seeing these same things over and over? What message was resonating within your soul?
Well, I was really struck by both, on the one hand, how many some of the common themes that were expressed differently in our different religious texts and traditions. And for me, I learned a lot in editing the letters. We asked all of the authors to quote a particular religious text. So there were Sanskrit texts and passages from the Quran that I had never read. And so I learned a lot from reading the sacred texts of other traditions, which I think is a important one of the contributions of the project. And it was also striking to me, particularly as a Bible scholar, to just see again and again how relevant and how these ancient words that are coming from these ancient texts, and they were just speaking in such a powerful way to the issues of the day. So texts that had to do about leadership. So there's a couple letters that talk about some of the kings in Israel and some of the teachings, the biblical teachings about leadership that just were so on point to our time and place. So it was just with the sense, and this is why I think I'm in the business of being a Bible scholar, just that sense of awe and excitement at how of unlocking these ancient texts so that they can become meaningful for our day and age today.
And we're speaking with Dr. Andrea Weiss, the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Provost at the Hebrew Union College in New York City, and also the Associate Professor of Bible. Andrea, you mentioned this awareness of the text and everything, and as a professor and a scholar in Bible, if I'm not mistaken, you are also very heavily involved as an editor of the Woman's Torah Commentary, correct?
Yes, I was the associate editor.
So I'm interested, as you were reading through the letters, you kind of alluded to this, and I could expand it on a little bit. You're an expert and you associate editor of the Women's Torah Commentary. What were the linkages? And did you have a lot of aha moments in saying, wait a minute, here's something from this tradition. Here's something from our tradition. I wonder how they came to be. What's the genesis of how these ideas from two very, very perhaps different cultures and times in history morph together here?
In terms of the projects themselves, there's, I think, an interesting connection. I've had a chance to reflect on this in some of my teaching about the book. So the Torah, Women's Commentary, is a commentary that was published in 2008 by now the Central Conference for American Rabbis, the CCAR Press. And it's a commentary that contains the insights of Jewish women on the Torah, the five books of Moses. And that project, like this, also brings together a multivocal, diverse audience to speak about religious texts and to make them, to uncover what do they say and what do they say to us today. So, there is a common link in those two projects. And also I will say in American Values Religious Voices that a little over half of our letter writers are women. And I think that's also an important part of the project. There are a few letters that speak specifically to the experience of women. So for example, one letter, the refrain in that letter talks about what do we tell our daughters about the current political situation. Another one speaks specifically about what it's like being a female religious leader in this current climate.
Is this a hopeful book?
I think it is very much so. I think the hope here is that it models a way that people from different faiths, people from different political persuasions, you know, people who are different in many ways can come together and engage in dialogue around our common values. I'll share a story that was shared with me by one of our letter writers. And about a quarter of the way into the 100 days, it was actually day 24 to be exact, she was at church. Karina Hogan, one of our letter writers, was at church. And one of the members of her church came up to her, and he's a Democrat living in Manhattan, and he has a brother who's a Republican, a staunch Trump supporter in Oklahoma. And they had stopped talking during the campaign. And he told her that they had begun to speak again because they were talking about the letters, that the letters had brought them together and had brought them a sense of healing. And I think that's a good example of what the potential of the project, both the book in and of itself, and also as a model of engaging in dialogue around common issues.
Right. I think it's important to understand so people don't get the wrong idea. This is not a political, ideological book. It's nonpartisan.
Correct.
And I think people really need to understand that. It's a nonpartisan. It really speaks from the soul of a religious tradition, an American religious tradition, really, which is another conversation perhaps. But in many ways, the title of the book, American Values, Religious Voices, does speak to the idea that this is maybe could only have happened in the United States of America. And as a Bible scholar, I mean, it's true, isn't it? This is really a unique gift of the American culture to be able to have this type of a book published and look at the political arena from a religious, moral, ethical standpoint. Or am I overstating that?
No, I think that's really the foundation of the project, is that a lot of our American values are rooted in our different religious traditions. And that's exactly what got me thinking that at this moment in our nation's history, that maybe scholars of sacred scripture who aren't generally on the forefront of the public conversation might have something to say to remind us and to reaffirm for us what are our core American values and the ways that they are connected to our different religious traditions.
Do you have a sense, and this is a little bit maybe off the wall question, but do you have a sense as a professor at a seminary and as expert and professor of Bible, that the public discourse around religion has been skewed? In other words, that there are voices that are not heard?
Yeah, I would say that's the case. And I think that I think that's been a reaction to the election in general we've heard a louder, more diverse religious voice speaking up about contemporary issues, political issues. So I think that's another contribution of this project, is to bring a diverse group of people, different faiths, different, who have different views about things, and bringing them together in conversation about about issues of the day.
So obviously from writing the book and editing the you feel that there's a need for a religious voice within the public square.
For sure. Absolutely. These are, these core issues of what kind of a society do we want to have, and what are the values that are going to undergird it? And there our religious traditions have a lot to say about how do we live our lives day in and day out, and what is the right way to structure a society so that we are living lives of justice and morality, so that we're a compassionate society that cares for other people. So I think without the religious values behind our laws, then, we need a foundation.
Do you think the book American Values, Religious Voices can be a catalyst for a more meaningful interfaith dialogue in the country right now? Because my sense is, as I go around, even dealing with my Jewish sacred aging work around North America, there really does seem to be a void in that. It seems that people are still off in their own little silos and corners. So do you think this book could be a catalyst for a more meaningful, rational interfaith dialogue amongst the broad spectrum of religious values and experiences?
Yeah, I'd love to see people be inspired by the book and get together with other people from different faiths, and to in a sense gauge in this same process of both learning together and listening to each other. I've had an opportunity in a number of different cities where we've brought together letter writers. I was just in Atlanta with six other letter writers, and it was a great opportunity to have people from different faiths come together. They read their letters. They talked about why they wrote, what they wrote, what they felt the impact of the project was. So I'd love to see more people engage in that dialogue. I think it would be a meaningful contribution. One of the someone at my in my office said to me, at the end of the 100 days, she said that the letters made her feel like she wasn't alone. And I think the more that we can be in conversation about the issues that matter to us, and to see that they matter to people who are coming from different backgrounds and who have different beliefs than we do, I think that makes us feel more united, makes us feel less isolated. I think that would be a contribution.
Not only that, I'm just thinking as you're saying that, it would be wonderful to have maybe even HUC convene such a interfaith dialogue across the ideological spectrum, and also make it intergenerational. Because I think a lot of younger people just are not aware of some of the subtleties and importance of what the value, all of the values that you talk about in American Values, Religious Voices. So there's, I think, a great intergenerational potential there as well.
Well, and I'd add that the intergenerational piece was something that I was quite conscious about when I was asked, when I was sending invitations. And it was important to me that the book has both the voices of some of our most distinguished, prominent Bible scholars, but also young people and people who are new scholars and just and younger people as well. So, and I think some of those letters are one of the highlights of the book, and that kind of diversity of experience.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if any universities who are in classes on American history or civics or government could use this book as a text or as a jumping off point for conversation on a college campus. It'd be very interesting. I don't know whether that just thought occurred. I don't know whether that's happening or there's any way to monitor that, but it would be interesting to find out.
Well, I know. So when we started putting the book together, I had the idea for one of the essays. I thought, well, it'd be great to get someone who's a political scientist, someone who wasn't a letter writer, who's an outside the project, to take a look at it. Particularly, I have all the feedback that we received during the 100 days. And so I had this idea for one of the essays, and then out of the blue, about a year ago, I got an email from a woman, Leah Howard, who in the during the 100 days was teaching a religion and politics class at St. Joseph's University in the Philadelphia suburbs. And it turned so we were connected by one of the rabbis in the community, and she reached out to me. And so she ended up writing an essay for the book in which she talks about her experience using the letters in her religion and politics class during those early months of the Trump presidency, and also reflecting more broadly on the project. So I do know that that some people are using this the letters in college classes, which I think is a great another great use for the project.
Oh, great! Mazel tov on that. That's really good. Speaking of, you alluded to it, Lane. If somebody wants to bring you in and bring you in as a scholar in residence to talk about the book and stuff like that, how do they do that?
They can just reach out to me via email, aweiss@huc, for Hebrew Unit College, .edu.
You alluded to one of the letters, which, and we didn't rehearse this, but in my notes, I made this also the, what do we tell our daughters on page 40, I think is the-
Letter 12.
And as I looked at that, the question that I wanted to raise with you, because I think it's a very, very important question in this day and age. Talk to me a little bit about the concept of legacy and what we want to leave to the next, to mark our kids, our grandchildren, and how this, that letter and how this book could be helpful in that.
So, well, let me share two things about that. I mean, I think this question of legacy and what do we leave is also about, you know, what will the historical records say about how did we respond to the to this period in history? And that, for me, was one of the motivations to embark on what was really a pretty far-fetched idea. I'm a Hebrew Bible scholar at a Jewish seminary. I don't have a big interfaith network. I have plenty to do in my day job, and you know, by all measures, I should have. This was an idea that I had, and I should have just like released into the atmosphere. But it took hold of me, and in part because I didn't want to regret that I had an idea for something that maybe you know that I had an idea and I didn't try to make it happen. And one of the things that I'm proud about with the project is that it, you know, certainly models for my own kids being faced with a situation and not wanting to feel helpless, wanting to feel that there's a way that I could respond to events unfolding around me using the resources that I had. And that's certainly why my partner, Lisa Weinberger, why she was willing to help when I sent her an email saying, you know, I think I need a website, you know, would you be willing to help me? And she volunteered all of her resources, time and effort pro bono, because she too was looking for a way to contribute to something bigger than herself. And I think that's a kind of legacy of that we leave in terms of a model of not feeling like you're just helpless to events as they unfold, but that you can use the resources that you have to try to make an impact. One of the letters that I often quote is from Mark Brettler, and he writes in letter 14, "Standing idling by or arguing that someone else should step up is not an option. We are each accountable if we do not work to improve our communities." And for me, this was a way of stepping up to try to leave a legacy of that would matter.
Yeah, I think the message to that also, as I'm listening to you articulate it, is everybody has a special gift and an ability, and that's the gift that they can leave behind. And in that sense, your gift as a professor and a scholar manifests itself through the book, which is in essence part of your legacy. So I think it's an important message to teach that everybody's legacy responds to their own individual gift and who they are. And you have to not let it go. You have to own it and live it. As the like Pirkei Avot, you know, that passage of, you know, you don't have to save the entire world. Yeah. Just take care of saving your little part of it in your own little way.
Right. And I think another lesson from the book too, is just the idea of, bringing people together who will give of themselves for something bigger. I never could have done this project on my own. And people were willing to help in a lot of different ways, both the letter writers, the design team that did the beautiful graphics, and our social media. I had rabbinic interns, and also the people who were reading the letters and sharing them with their friends. And in that way, the project became something much bigger than we ever could have imagined. And it's that really that collective effort that is also meaningful. So the idea that we can join together to be part of something bigger than ourselves.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned the graphics too, Andrew, because the book is put together beautifully. As you hold it and look at it, you can see that there's a tremendous amount of time, commitment, and most of all, love that moved into this. Again, we didn't rehearse this, so it's maybe a surprise, but do you have the book in front of you?
I sure do.
So I want you, as we start to run out of time, I wanted to save this for the end. On page 158, as the book is winding down, you have this, A Prayer for Our Country. And I'm going to ask you to just tell us how that prayer came to be. And if you don't mind, to read it, because the prayer it's really beautiful. And the wording and the sense and the feeling and the message is very, very, very pertinent, relevant, and spot on. So what was the decision like to end this book with A Prayer for Our Country?
So I'll tell you how the prayer came about. At ordination each year at the Hebrew Union College in New York, there's a prayer for the country. And during the 100 days, the days leading up to it, all of my students got involved. You know, everyone sort of was aware and following the project and kind of swept up with it along with me. And so the students who were being ordained that year asked me to give the prayer for the country. Ah. And I had the idea to write a prayer using quotes from the letter. So I went through I don't even think at that point the campaign was finished. So I went through all the letters that had been published at that point. And I just took a sentence from eight of the letters. We debuted the prayer for the country at my son's bar mitzvah, which was on day 72 on April 1st.
Oh, that's great.
So that was another reason why this was just a wacky idea.
That's great.
So to try to do this project while also planning a bar mitzvah. So that was the first time. And in fact, my synagogue in the Philadelphia suburbs, this is the prayer that they use most weeks at the end of the service. So it's a compilation of, as I said, a sentence or two from a variety of different letters from Muslim, Jewish, Christian writers, people from all sorts of backgrounds that are brought together. And what I think is a very hopeful and powerful prayer. And it was Lisa's idea to conclude the book with the prayer for our country.
So, by the way, before you do the prayer, does your son get acknowledgement somewhere and as being used at his bar mitzvah?
Well, he doesn't get acknowledged. the thing I wrote in the acknowledgments, my son Elon cheered me on daily and adjusted to many nights of takeout dinners, because I don't think I went to the market or cooked for 100 days.
That's cool. That's cool. So could you read the prayer?
It would be my honor.
Go ahead.
A prayer for our country. Every inch of America is sacred, from sea to shining sea. There is much to be done in our time, the sort of hard work on which God smiles, because it is done for the sake of the dignity and well-being of all God's creatures. Together, let us work to preserve and make manifest the values upon which our democracy was founded. The task of all people of faith is to call governing authorities to fulfill God's purpose of bringing about justice, mercy, and peace. Individually and as a nation, may we heed our obligations to each other as we navigate the tensions of building a just society. Rather than a politics of divisiveness, may we move our country towards a politics of empathy. May we use our power well so we do great things for all God's creatures, all those made in God's image who yearn for an equal place at America's table. If we do this, may grace and peace be ours in abundance, May we be a beacon and a blessing to the world.
And let us say, amen. Dr. Andrea Weiss, the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Provost Associate Professor of Bible at HUCJIR, the Hebrew Union College in New York City campus. Thank you very much, Andrea.
Thank you.
The book is American Values, Religious Voices, 100 Days, 100 Letters. You can get it through Amazon. And we urge you to take a look at this. And there are colleagues and educators listening to this. Put this on your list for the next year or two to think about bringing this book, as well as Andrea. And you can get a hold of her at A Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, A-W-E-I-S-S, at huc.edu for scholar in residence or program around the book. Well done. Andrea, thank you very, very much again. Continued good luck and have a great summer. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Enjoy. Take Bye-bye. Care. And before we sign off from today's podcast, I want to again remind you of an exciting addition to the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts. We're now able to accept donations that will allow us to expand our work and grow the programs of Jewish Sacred Aging, including these Seekers of Meaning podcasts. We're now working in partnership with the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern New Jersey, and they're a 501c3 umbrella that will allow us to move into this new area of development. As we roll out this announcement, we want to let you know that you can support the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts, and we welcome your free will donation. You can send a check to the Jewish Sacred Aging in care of the Jewish Community Foundation, and their address is 1301 Springdale Road, Suite 200. That's 1301 Springdale Road, Suite 200, the Jewish Community Foundation here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. That's 08003. And thank you for your attention for this and your support. And thank you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. These podcasts are recorded at the studios of the award-winning Lubetkin Global Media here in Cherry Hill, and produced by Steve Lubetkin. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you for listening. Toda Rabbah. See you next time. Shalom.